This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus is on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Tuesday evening special edition with the Jets and the Islanders tomorrow night in the usual start time. So we're here with you on a Tuesday evening. Joining us in 30 minutes time to talk about that Jets-Isles game is going to be Arthur Staple from Newsday. Frequent visitor to the show. Fine individual Arthur is. Coming up in 1 hour's time from Sports Business Journal, Chris Botta is going to join us. We'll talk about the new Canadian TV deal in the NHL. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. We start today to talking about last night's Jets-Devils game, a 3-1 Winnipeg Jets victory over the New Jersey Devils. Richard, Ezra, good evening to both of you. And the Winnipeg Jets got off on the right foot to start a six-game road trip that really, given the quality of competition they're facing, they should be looking to go at least 4-1-1, 5-1. Anything less than that is just not going to do it given the hole they've already dug for themselves this season.
Yeah, good evening, Drew. Good evening, Richie. It was a good way to start off the six-game road trip.
Six games, two weeks.
There you go. You bailed me out there. No, it was a good way to start out the road trip. And, you know, there was a few tense moments there, Richie, in the third period where the Jets were hemmed in their own zone by the Devils. But you had Evander Kane snapping out of a 11-game goal-scoring drought. You had Mark Scheifele, and I don't know how it was this many games. We knew it was quite a few games, but you had him snapping out of a 24-game goal drought. You had Jacob Trouba coming back, and he played pretty well in a variety of situations. And it was a good win for them. They hadn't gotten a clean 2 points in a long time, Richie, and they went into New Jersey, a team, by the way, that isn't probably a playoff team this year, but they've been playing a little bit better as of late. Marty Brodeur has stepped in for Corey Schneider, and he has gotten some wins lately, and they're a lot better than they were earlier on in the season. But they got a clean 2 points. They got some goals from players that aren't on the top line, and it's encouraging with the games that they have ahead against the Islanders, the Flyers, and the other Eastern Conference teams that they're going to play on this road trip. So all signs are positive. As Drew said, you know, you probably want to get somewhere in the neighborhood of 4 or 5 wins out of these six games, but it's definitely encouraging the way they played.
Well, I'll say this. First off, I mean, I watched the post game on TSN Jets. Like, can Evander Kane give some kind of an answer to the media that isn't, you know, coming off as being a jerk? I mean, for God's sake, you know, what do you think of breaking the slump? Oh, it's good, I got a goal. It's like, can you give him something? I mean, they're not asking you that too hard-hitting questions. That's the first thing that came to my mind when I'm watching that. Kane, you know, had a good chance right before he scored. He had a good chance, put the puck on net again and got the goal. You know, Jokinen gave him a couple nice feeds, won a face-off. A game they need to win, as you mentioned. You know, the Devils, as much as I want to read about Jaromir Jagr being the best player in the team, that is an amazing accomplishment for Jaromir Jagr and an amazing accomplishment for the New Jersey Devils. They don't have somebody better than Jaromir Jagr on the forward group. So, I mean, for that's a good thing and a bad thing if you're New Jersey. The Jets came out and, you know, they got a couple of guys off the schneid, right? Scheifele get going, Kane get going, and I'm sure, I think Dennis was talking about it last night on the broadcast on TSN Jets, was that, you know, once Kane scores, he's likely to get going. And I'm sure that's going to be the case. He fires so many pucks on net. So a good win. They play the Islanders. Islanders are last in the Metropolitan Division.
It's unbelievable with the talent they have there. And it's a combination of certain players not working out on the second and third lines, because we know up the middle they're solid with John Tavares and Franz Nielsen, Richie, but the goaltending has been very bad, and the defense has been a big question mark and a big area of concern for the Islanders. But it's a winnable game, but also a game that you don't want to take too lightly. And I don't think the Winnipeg Jets are looking at the New York Islanders and seeing them at the bottom of the standings. I think the fact that they're at the bottom of the standings is a reflection of actually how poor the goaltending has been and how many struggles they've had on defense. Mark Streit's obviously not there, but it's not just that. Other guys that they've had on just haven't been working out. So it's a winnable game, and you have to hope that they play with the same level of passion and discipline that they did, because, you know, for all that's said about the Jets losing that point against the Minnesota Wild on Saturday, you could make a strong argument that they deserve to win a very tight game. It could have gone either way. It was a tie game, let's be honest, but they've played two pretty tight checking games, and it's a very winnable game for them, as is Philadelphia. They've already beaten them once this year. But again, you don't want to take them lightly when you've got that type of scoring talent, Vanek, and we know Tavares and Nielsen are playing really well. So it's encouraging. They've started it off right, and they have to keep going. And I think that goes without saying, right?
Yeah, I would say it goes without saying. You look at the Isles game, and like you said, Richard, the Isles are at the bottom there of the Metropolitan Division, and really towards the bottom of the Eastern Conference. Only the Buffalo Sabres are worse than they are, and they're tied with the Florida Panthers. Mm-hmm. You know, what's an area the Jets can look to expose on the Islanders? This is a team that the Jets haven't had a ton of success against the Islanders the last couple of years, especially in Long Island. They won once there in November of I guess that would be 2011 back
then. Yeah, we were there.
Yeah, I don't think they've won there since then, if I recall correctly.
I mean, they only played a couple of games there. I mean, you know, Drew, when you look at the Islanders team as a whole, and we'll ask Arthur Staple of Newsday about the team and about the, you know, what I'm going to be pointing to now, and that's the defense. And, you know, we talk about goaltending, as you know, I agree. Goaltending is an issue. We both said it in six things we've learned this week over the course of the year that we both think that they need goaltending. But look at their defense. After Andrew McDonald and Travis Hamonic, who do they got? Lubomir Vyshnovsky, concussion. After him, Thomas Hickey is the leading point, the leading ice time. Matt Donovan, Brian Strait, Radek Martinek, Aaron Ness, and Matt Karkner. And I think that right there are six reasons, why you're not accomplishing what you wanted to accomplish.
Sure, that's not a who's who, I would say, of quality defensemen for the most part.
It isn't, Drew, and the Jets, you know, we've said it a few times, you know, if Evander Kane, I mean, Minnesota with not great depth on defense, Jersey not great defense overall, as now the Islanders. Evander Kane's getting the opportunity to go after some below average competition, and he might as well take advantage of it.
Sure. I thought he did a decent job taking advantage of it last night.
Yeah, no, he did. I mean, that post-game interview, though. Was that real?
Are you surprised at this point?
I mean, come on. Can you give some respect to the reporters?
Well, are you surprised?
I mean, I don't know.
Are you surprised?
A little bit surprised. I just think that the questions were so innocuous that you could have just answered them with a modicum of respect.
You have high hopes, I guess, or higher hopes than a lot of other people, but that's fair. I mean, you're right. Because, even if he spoke in cliche, it would have been fine. But, speaking cliche and then not speak respectfully in cliche, it's sort of a double whammy at that point in time.
I mean, pull up that audio, Remus. I'm not sure if you have it from the TV broadcast last night, but... just for the listeners so they know what we're referring to. But, you know, getting back to taking advantage of this defense, you can take advantage of them with size and with speed. And which is something, for example, that Evander Kane has, you know, said Gucci can skate, Jokinen has been playing better. And a guy like Mark Scheifele, hey, these are the opportunities to get going, right? I mean, these are the easy matchups. You're playing in the East.
Yeah.
As he mentioned, Jersey, Islanders, Philly. You know, you're playing Tampa, Florida later on, too, and the Rangers. I mean, all these teams suck. I could try and sugarcoat it. These teams suck. The Islanders are last. The Flyers have talent.
You already beat them once. Okay?
Yeah, you beat them once, and you can outskate them. They have talent. Mm-hmm. The Rangers, I mean, as you can talk about it later in terms of the way they're preventing goals, but, I mean, they're a mess.
Yeah.
So Tampa doesn't have anybody. I mean, look at Tampa's lineup. You tell me one regular NHL fan who can name five guys on Tampa's forward group, and I'll give them a cake. And then you have Florida, who's a young team and a bunch of middling veterans who are obviously rebuilding right now, and change is eventually on the way there. So certainly winnable. You said 4-1-1. Yeah, I don't think that's unrealistic. I don't think that's unrealistic, never mind the expectation being unrealistic. I think likely that they will probably go 4-1-1 even, like, because the Jets aren't that good of a team. But they play at a higher level in the West. So when they're coming over, so long as they maintain anything close to that level, they should be all right.
Sure, because they've had to play against better teams for the most part this season. And as long as they play at this, like you said, if they play at the level in which they played against, if they play against Minnesota, or they play against, you know, on this road trip, they play against the teams like they played against Minnesota,
right.
They're likely going to win those games.
That's right.
I would agree with that. I think going 4-1-1 is something that you want to do. I mean, you're talking about the New York Islanders. I think they're a team that has obviously struggled big time. I think that you know, they're in a situation where they've gotten such poor goaltending, and you still have performances by John Tavares and Franz Nielsen, and they're playing very well. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, they're a team that is definitely not a last-place team, and they'll be further up in the standings because we know the Eastern Conference isn't exactly an excellent conference this year. New York Rangers are starting to come along. They're in ninth place in the East right now, but they're, as Richie said, they're having difficulty scoring goals and putting everything together there. But absolutely, you look at the home games that they have coming up after the road trip, and you're going to get St. Louis, and you're going to get Colorado, and then the teams that you play at home and away later on in December a little bit easier. I think they've got the Sabres twice, they've got Florida, so the schedule is probably the toughest that it's going to be for the next 6 weeks. So it's definitely the opportunity is definitely there, and you could say that a few of these teams are on par with the Jets, but you know, absolutely, the Jets, when they have a full team. And that was a pretty consistent effort. That was a pretty solid effort. The third period wasn't very good, but for the most part, you got balanced scoring. Andre Pavlik was unbelievable, and I thought Jacob Trouba, for a guy that's missed 17 games, was also unbelievable.
I was going to ask about what you thought about Trouba's performance last night.
I thought he was very steady, but Jacob Trouba is one of the most talented guys, and it's tough to say that when you're a 19-year-old defenseman, but the player is, really, the hype is really warranted as far as Jacob Trouba goes, because he's an excellent skater, he's very poised, and he's mature beyond his years, and he can come into the lineup after suffering a very serious injury and really slot in nicely and be consistent.
What did you think of Trouba last night, Richie?
I didn't see enough of the game, Drew. I only saw parts of it, and I mean, I can speak more to Trouba as a player than I did last night. And as a player, he's arguably their best two-way defenseman. That's what I think. I think his offensive game is developing and has developed at a rapid pace, I think far quicker than probably the Jets even anticipated. He's going to take a little bit of time in terms of getting some of the kinks out of his game for being out that long, but I saw a little bit of the game last night. I was busy at the beginning of the game, and he acquitted himself quite well. So a guy like him with so much talent, I don't worry about him. He's got to play. He's got to stay healthy. He's going to be fine. He's too talented to really. I don't think, based on what I see from Trouba in terms of his demeanor, and from by all accounts his work ethic, it's just a matter of harnessing it all, because he has more offensive talent than Bogosian, and he has more defensive talent than Byfuglien, and then from natural talent I'm talking about here. So that makes him, in due time, to me, the best defenseman on the team. Just takes a little bit of time.
I thought, you really got to see almost the best of Jacob Trouba when he broke up that 2-on-1 there, in that crucial part of the game there, Ezzy.
Absolutely. But Trouba is an excellent, excellent positional defenseman. I mean, when you say mature beyond your years, it's really applicable to Trouba. He's missed 17 games. He was in a neck brace for 3 weeks, and he comes back, and he really was one of the stronger defensemen. Now, I thought Mark Stewart was really good. He led the team in block shots with 5. And I thought, for the most part, that the Jets are the type of team, they're not the quickest team out of their own zone. When they get, moving around, guys like Ellerby and Byfuglien can have their problems. But for the most part, Jacob Trouba, let's put it this way, he didn't get on the score sheet. But when he was on the ice, you never saw him burnt that bad. And a couple of plays, he was a little bit, out of position. But we're talking about his game as a whole. He's very, very talented in all facets of the game. Richie mentioned his offensive upside. Right now, he's obviously concentrating on his defensive game. Mm-hmm. And the Jets have Byfuglien. They have Enstrom. They have guys that can put the puck in the net from the blue line. So for Trouba, if he doesn't get it on the score sheet, let's put it this way. If he goes 11 games without a goal, and granted, he is a defenseman, we're not going to be giving him as much grief as we would with Scheifele, who is an offensive player. He's a forward, obviously. But no, Trouba was great for his first game back. Absolutely. I mean, it was a bit of a shock that he was even going to play last night, right? We heard about it on Sunday. But, the fact that he's back, and, we were talking about him maybe being out till January, it's really impressive. I mean, they have a really good draft pick there, and he has an extremely bright future.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the concussion lawsuit that the NHL is now facing.
All right.
Discuss the merits of it.
I have a concussion, though. Is that going to prevent me from talking about the subject?
No,
I might forget what you just said.
We assume you are. You've always been concussed since we started doing the show. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Minutes past 6 o'clock here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. This is NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, special Tuesday night edition, as tomorrow evening the Jets and the Isles will be in the midst of the first period at this point in time on this fine radio station, and on TSN Jets, of course. It's sort of inevitable that this happened. Everybody was sort of just waiting for it as soon as you saw the NFL settle their lawsuit in regards to concussions. But 10 retired players are suing the NHL in a class action lawsuit alleging the league didn't do enough to protect their brains. That's the sort of summary brought by Eric Macromella, TSN's legal expert. The 10 players, there's a couple names you'll remember. Gary Lehman and Rick Vive being the two most famous ones.
Yep. Lehman scored, 52 for the Leafs?
And then was
for the Flames. 52?
He scored it for the Leafs, and then he was part of one of the worst trades in NHL history to the Flames for Dougie Gilmore, among other players. Gary Lehman and Rick Vive. Then the rest of the guys, I got to admit, I haven't heard of any of them. Brad Aitken, Darren Banks, Kurt Bennett, Richie Dunn, Warren Holmes, Bob Mano, Blair Stewart, and Morris Titanic. By the way, that's a great wrestling name right there, Morris Titanic.
Just a great name.
Do you think these guys have a case? I'll start with you, Richie. You have the legal expertise around the table.
It's hard to say, Drew, if they have a case. I mean, they obviously think they have a case if they're bringing this forward. They wouldn't waste all the time if they didn't. But I kind of go both ways on some of the stuff I read in the articles, and we haven't seen any of the materials, so who knows. But a couple of the things that the suit argues, at least according to the Associated Press here, is that the league continues to contribute to injuries today by refusing to ban fighting and body checking, and by employing enforcers, quote-unquote, it says, whose main job is to fight or violently body check opponents. And the lawsuit accuses the league of promoting a culture of violence in which players are praised for their fighting and headhunting skills. Well, first off, aren't these issues voted on by the PA?
The PA, it should be, to that point, it's worth noting the PA is not involved in this lawsuit whatsoever.
Which is, I think, important to note.
Sure.
If you're going to be voting as players in favor of fighting, and you want the rights, and you argue about the NHL going, this is the thing that, to me, sticks out the most. The NHL tries to suspend. Patrick Kaleta appeals. You want to have the rights to appeal? You want to have the rights to say, I'm able to do that? And the NHLPA for years and years, I know they're not involved in this, years has defended the play, to me, the offender more than the victim. Mm-hmm. And I think in the big scheme of things, how can you say the NHL hasn't done anything when players also haven't done anything to stop that? And the players, I mean, again, they're employing enforcers. Well, if you don't want to fight, and this is a hard one, but if you don't want to fight, you don't have to fight. Nobody forces you to drop the gloves.
Sure. If the players wanted to get fighting out of the game.
If that's your way to make a living, you could go scout. You could do something else. Maybe not for as much money, but some guy who's playing in the AHL, who's a scorer, might get that job. Is that a personal choice? It's a tough personal choice, but it's a personal choice. So there's a lot of ambiguity here. And one thing I want to point to, too, Ezzy, before you get in here, and again, you haven't seen the stuff, so it's hard to say, but I look at the NFL. I look at Wes Welker and the Denver Broncos last week incurring a concussion.
Sure.
Plays on Sunday night.
This past Sunday.
Even. So on Sunday night against Kansas City, he
gets had a little
concussion.
Bit of a problem with that fair catch.
Right, but then you have him come back on Sunday. The National Hockey League, I know obviously that this lawsuit points to years and years and years, but the National Hockey League is far ahead of the curve in terms of, as compared to the National Football League. In the NHL, no guy is getting a concussion and playing the next game. And if you say the next game 2 days later, 3 days later, that does not happen anymore.
They've actually been the front runner, as far as the quiet room and the concussion protocol, if I'm not mistaken. And Richie, I wanted to say, as far as this 10-player lawsuit goes, and I have to preface this by saying that Richie's got the law degree. I was the one that failed the LSAT and never got into law school.
Can't even fail the LSAT, but yeah.
So, you get like 120 for, writing your name, but Richie's the lawyer here. But to me, and this lawsuit, you have to look at in a vacuum. And what I mean by that is not literally in a vacuum, but it's a figure of speech. What I mean by that
thanks for clarifying.
Is that this is a lawsuit where they're going to have to prove that information was withheld from them that could have prevented them from having brain injuries. Is that not the crux of what this is? They have to have evidence, proof, that they were put into a situation where they were injured when they it could have been prevented. Now,
allegation raised by the players is concealment.
Concealment. So they have to prove that the general managers of their respective teams, and there's multiple teams involved here, mm-hmm. they're going to have to prove, Richie, that, okay, well, they were put out in a situation where, you know, that their increased chance of getting an injury could have been something that was prevented, meaning they should have been told about it. But as far as taking fighting out of hockey and this and that, I mean, this is a separate – that's what I mean by this. This is something in a vacuum. Sure, is this going to cause maybe the NHLPA to re-examine fighting in hockey? I don't think so, by the way, because I think we've talked about this before. The large majority of players support fighting in hockey. And Bill Daly already came out and said, we've been taking many precautions – whether it's, you know, having players keep their helmets on or, you know, concussion protocols for teams. I mean, this is something that they're going to have to look at. And again, we don't have the details, but this is something where they're going to have to prove that evidence was concealed from them.
That's why I think this settles. I don't think the NHL wants to go into court and have to deal with all that.
Well, it's one thing if it's against guys who I think have played a significant amount of their games in the NHL. These guys, one of the guys in the lawsuit, it matters to some degree. Warren Holmes played 45 regular season NHL games. He played 737 games outside of the league.
Sure, I mean, that's a factor, but again, it's a class action, Drew. And when you're looking at the team, if you're looking at Gary Lehman, for example, or Rick mm-hmm. Vive, if things have been concealed, and don't think for a second that there haven't been coaches who've known players have been a little bit wonky and sent them out there to go do something.
Right.
I mean, let's be honest here, and that's likely happened. I mean, that's almost assuredly over the course of time happened before. I've heard of accounts of it, and
so you hear
about guys living now with ringing in their ears and
memory
problems and a bunch of other stuff, and they've been thrown out there maybe after they shouldn't have. So this is why do you think the NFL settled?
The NFL settled because, I mean, I think the evidence was so overwhelming at that point in time. And they had reached a critical mass of people that it was pretty much every ex-player almost seemed to be involved. Sure. This is 10 guys in the NHL, most of whom had minimal NHL careers with the exception of Lehman and Vive. The other guys, you know, like I said, they played 737 games outside the NHL.
That's combined.
No, it's not. Warren Holmes, who's in this contract, played 45 regular season NHL games.
No, but you're saying 737 games.
Outside of the NHL.
Oh, just him.
Just him.
Okay.
So why should the NHL pay for those 45 games?
Well, Drew, this is...
And how do you prove when Warren Holmes
and that's what it's all
concussions?
About. You know, Richie's, again, he's most likely right. He knows about this stuff more than I do. And if it settles, I hope, though, that the argument against fighting isn't, oh, well, they settled because blah, blah, blah. I mean, the fact is, I think we've all agreed and we've talked about this, and I think we've beaten this to death on this show, that we think that there should be less fighting in hockey. Now, some people think it should be totally erased. Some people think there should be a little bit of it. Some, you know what I mean? But as far as this lawsuit goes, the two aren't related. I mean, you can't – this is – if these players – If stuff was concealed from them and they were put out in a situation to get injured, sure, they should be paid. There should be something to come out of this. But as far as you can't, you know, they started bringing in, you know, the deaths of hockey players that have had overdoses and stuff like that. This is totally different. Well, you can't just put everything into one big issue here. And this is something that you're talking about players that have been out of the league for 20 years here.
These guys might have a claim. I don't know that they don't have a claim, but I don't think they are the proper people to bring the first lawsuit against the NHL. That's, I think, if it had been other players who'd been in the NHL for years upon years and had played, you know, the majority of their NHL career, their hockey career in the NHL, and these guys wanted to join their class action, I think there's a legitimate case to be made for that.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely legitimate, but I hate when they start saying, it's coming. There's a settlement coming, and that means fighting is coming out soon. It's like, no, they have nothing to do with one another. First off, we don't know the details. But as I said, there's obviously credibility to that. Richie mentioned that they wouldn't go through this whole process if there wasn't some legs to it, so to speak. But you don't want to just start throwing every single injury and fighting and headshots and everything and as if this is going to be somehow, you know, cure all of hockey's problems, right? This is a separate incident, and hopefully There's justice for these guys.
Here's more from Eric Macromello. The NHL could also argue that the lawsuit doesn't belong in court in the first place, but rather should go to arbitration. The collective bargaining agreement provides that issues of player health and safety go to arbitration and not court. On the flip side, the players could take the position that since this case involves fraud, it properly falls outside of arbitration and within the jurisdiction of the courts. I think the difficult part is then the players then have to prove fraud, and I think that's really when they're gonna that's going to be the tricky issue involving in, the, in all this. But Richie, you do think that this goes that the NHL settles on this? You don't worry about a slippery slope if they do settle?
I think they settle. I mean, I haven't done extensive research into this, but that's my first look at it. I mean, that's what I would guess based on what I've read, but I haven't done extensive research on this. If you want to open, you know, you talk about the slippery slope in terms of the payment. You talk about opening up a can of worms in terms of some testimony and some other evidence, and that's a whole different ballgame.
Well, I think the bad PR has to play in here, right, Drew? I mean, this can't be good PR in any way for the NHL or NHLPA, right? This drawing out and... That would be my guess. I don't think everything comes down to PR, but I mean, when this came out, this wasn't really positive news for anybody.
Well, something we'll keep an eye on and something we'll monitor as it proceeds through the court system. You're listening to NHL Midweek. When we come back, Arthur Staple from Newsday is going to join us.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly past 6:30 in the evening, welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is illegalcurve.com.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
We welcome back to NHL Midweek our good friend from Newsday in Long Island, Arthur Staple. Arthur, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How are you?
We're doing very well ourselves. Thanks very much. Jets and Isles tomorrow. First meeting of the season between these two long-term rivals there from the Eastern Conference over the last couple of years, at least. Isles, you know, got active in the trade market really early on this year. They made the big deal getting Thomas Vanek from the Buffalo Sabres, and we had you on when that deal went down. You know, it's been a few weeks since then. What are the early returns on Thomas Vanek as a New York Islander?
Well, he's kind of got an incomplete grade, I think, just because he missed, you know, pretty much six games with a strained oblique muscle. And I would say the team itself has just not coalesced well with the new arrival. You know, I don't necessarily think that they were going great guns when Matt Molson was here. And as we talked about, part of Garth Snow's plan in making that big deal and giving up quite a bit and giving up Molson and, you know, a top 10 protected first round pick next season and then a second round pick in 2015. Part of the motivation there was to try to shake his team up. They were, you know, kind of hovering around 500 and he wanted to try and see if this was the sort of deal that could, you know, wake some guys up in the room. And I think, unfortunately, it's had the opposite effect for the Islanders. They've been beset by some injuries on defense, and their play in their own zone hasn't been good. And they've had a few guys who really haven't produced much. You know, they were so good last year down the stretch when they were getting scoring from all different lines. And really, it's been Tavares with Vanek. They certainly had good chemistry and have produced some goals. But and actually, their fourth line with Casey Cizikas has been pretty productive of late. But it's really that middle group: Franz Nielsen, Michael Grabner, Josh Bailey, Peter Regan, Pierre-Marc Bouchard. Those guys have just not been producing on a regular basis and not really playing very well at either end of the ice. And, you know, with their injuries, with the injury of Danny Nabokov, Kevin Poulin has played pretty well, but not necessarily well enough. And really, the defense is so depleted right now. They need their forwards to be playing as well as they could possibly be playing, and it's just not happening.
Arthur, you mentioned the struggles of some of the secondary scorers, and you mentioned Michael Grabner, and I think we've asked him, asked you about him a lot on the show because he played for the Manitoba Moose for several years. He's really struggled. He's only got 3 goals so far in 21 games, and last year he was really putting the puck in the net a lot during the lockout shortened year. What's been the issue with him? Because he's a guy that I expected to really be better this year.
Yeah, you know, I think everybody expected it, and certainly, you know, even with with the slump that he was in, he had two goals in the first game, and he actually hasn't had any since then. Not for lack of chances. I think I'm sure Winnipeg fans can remember back to his Moose days. He's a guy who can create scoring chances. He's a dynamic player on the ice, but if he misses a couple, he tends to fade out a little bit mentally. And I think that's, again, been his problem. And now that he's into his third full year with the Islanders, I think they were hoping that maybe this was a thing of the past, that he was a bit more mature, a bit more capable of doing things in other areas to compensate. And, you know, he was a healthy scratch last week in Toronto. I think even he felt he saw that coming just because he wasn't producing and he wasn't really doing a whole lot else. And, you know, he's been a very effective penalty killer over the years, and their penalty kill has been just god-awful in the last, really the whole season. They're buried down at the bottom, but in the last 12 games or so, it's really sunk down, and there's just been a lot of guys skating on heels and not getting in shooting lanes, and I think Grabner was definitely one of the guys who was not participating and not battling hard enough, as the coaches like to say. So he took a seat, and since he's been back, he really hasn't done a whole lot. So, I don't really know what can change there other than him getting a goal to go in and kind of getting on a hot streak. But he needs to do more, I think, even just beyond trying to score goals at this point.
Arthur, one of the players on the Islanders I've liked for quite a while is Franz Nielsen. A guy is versatile, can play the point on the power play, can play the penalty kill. A guy who really, I thought, kind of, you know, goes under the radar for most of his career even. This year he's had an absolute breakout year. Why has that been?
I think he had some good, he was shooting the puck a little bit more early in the season. I think his work on the power play, he was on that first power play unit at the beginning of last season, and then when Lubo Vershnovsky came in, he kind of ducked out, and I think at the time he was a little bit pleased that he was going to go back to what he felt like was more of his natural role, which is to be more of a two-way center to kind of create offense out of defense and play against maybe the second line on opposing teams, if not the first line, and kill penalties. And I think he likes saving his energy for those kinds of things. He's his fast start this year, especially on the power play, has kind of cemented his role as being a guy who plays in all three situations. And, I think it's starting to take a little bit of a toll on him. He's not producing quite as much on the power play. Penalty kill is just, as I said, been dreadful. They lose a lot of penalty kill face-offs. They don't get a lot of pucks out. And I think his 5-on-5 play has suffered, too. He's the guy who makes that second line go. And I think, he and Grabner and Josh Bailey have all kind of ebbed and flowed a little bit. They were going pretty well at the beginning of the year. And now it's been a long, long time since Grabner or Bailey scored a goal. And it's been a while since Nielsen scored one at even strength. So, that line, I think, collectively might need to be rejiggered a little bit. And, I don't know if Nielsen just needs to refocus a little bit, but I think the things that he prides himself on are suffering, face-offs, defensive play, his plus-minus, things like that. And, I think he would trade that all in if he would trade in the power play work and the extra points he's gotten just so he could, bring up those other numbers.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Arthur Staple of Newsday. Arthur, we talked about the defensive woes of the New York Islanders, and it's been since October 21st that Lubomir Vishnovsky was placed on injured reserve. The team hasn't seen him since. Any update on his status?
He came along on a road trip last week and did some balance exercises and rode a stationary bike, and I think, things don't seem to have been, there don't seem to have been any dramatic setbacks from that. So we'll see. They have three games at home this week, two more after the Jets are in tomorrow, and then they go one more next week and go off on a West Coast road trip. So I would imagine maybe by the West Coast trip he could be ready to return if he's taking his next deliberate steps back, skating a little bit, taking a rest, taking a baseline test, going back, maybe initiating some contact. It's been a long, long road, and he's, just seeing him around, he's usually a very cheerful guy. He's been very frustrated with the slow process of this, and his absence has really been felt in a major way. He went out right around the same time that Brian Strait ran out, and Strait had been struggling with an injury he was trying to play through, wasn't able to do it, and he's really you know, in a sort of mysterious place with his injury. I'm not even sure that they know what it is yet. It might be back related, but it's still very, very much in the early stages. And, you know, they've been having a lot of trouble. They've got been forced to use Matt Carpenter and Radek Martinek night after night. And those are two guys that don't really have the wheels to play the system the Islanders want to play. And otherwise, they've got two rookies in Aaron Ness and Matt Donovan who have had their moments, but are still two rookies on defense. So the burden has definitely fallen on Travis Hamonic and Andrew McDonald and Thomas Hickey. Hickey left the game in Philadelphia with a bruised foot. He's apparently going to try to give it a go tomorrow. McDonald took a puck off his face in practice the other day and bruised his hand blocking a shot in Pittsburgh. These guys are banged up and playing tons of minutes, so it's really a rough situation. I think Darcy Nose has been trying to work the phones and find somebody to, you know, a minutes-eating defenseman, but there certainly aren't a lot of them out there. You know, you can probably think of 10 teams off the top of your head that would love to have a top four guy who play 20 minutes a night to add to their defense corps. So it's kind of status quo right now, and, you know, the Islanders, hindsight is 20/20, and I'm sure they wish they hadn't sent Griffin Reinhardt back to Edmonton when they did. If he could certainly be helping out right now, but you know, they have to try to look for the answers from within right now because there's really just not a lot of other options.
It sounds like the Isles are pretty close to calling us up to play defense for them.
I'm sure they've got job applications out there for plenty of people in case someone can surprise them.
You know, Arthur, you've mentioned that the Islanders have really struggled on defense, and Andrew McDonald and Travis Hamonic play 25 to 30 minutes a night. Is it safe to say that the Islanders are too top-heavy? And you mentioned that Garth Snow's trying to make a move, but do you really believe that that is imminent, even though the D market maybe isn't as strong as Garth Snow would like it to be?
Yeah, I mean, I know that, you know, I suggested on my blog the other day that the Islanders and Rangers should be looking at a deal for Michael Delzato, who, you know, the Rangers have made him very available and want to move him out and see if they can get a decent return for him. But I'm not sure if Garth Snow has had any conversations on that front. Knowing him, I'm sure he has talked to Glenn Taylor at some point in the last few weeks about that situation, but... you know, maybe the price is too high. I think Garfield might be a little gun-shy right now to give up anything more after giving up so much to get Thomas Vanek and not having that situation work out in it just yet. So I think they've still just got their fingers crossed for Vishnovsky to get back as soon as he can and hope that a couple of these, you know, an Aaron Ness or Matt Donovan, the light can go on and they can maybe increase their minutes a little bit to take some of the heat up. They really... you know, their struggles on defense have kind of overshadowed the fact that they produced off the waiver wire a guy who they love in Thomas Hickey, who's kind of gaining in confidence and gaining in minutes. You know, a guy who was a number four overall pick and was mired in the Kings organization for years. And they picked him off waivers before last season. They really didn't even trust him that much. And he had a rough go in the playoffs, but he's been a 20-minute-a-night guy, you know, since Nijanovsky went out. And, you know, been pretty impressive. And the problem is that not a lot of other guys have gone along with him and kind of seized that moment to play more minutes and play them confidently. So, I don't know if a trade is imminent. You know, even Rusty Kessler was on waivers, and I had a lot of people on Twitter, you know, desperate Islanders fans saying, hey, this guy could help us. And, you know, there's a reason guys like that are on waivers. He's got a big contract, even though it only goes till the end of the year. He's got to get hurt a lot. I don't think he would... Cause there to be a much different look on the Islanders' defense. So I think Arsenal is going to sit tight and hope for the best with Krasnovsky. And if something happens there, maybe as we get closer into December. But you know, if they lose a few more games where they lost in the last 10, I don't know if it's even going to matter if they try to make a splashy deal for a defenseman.
Final question, Arthur. We talk about the defense and the lack of depth and really the lack of talent on the back end. Between the pipes, there's also an issue, at least in my opinion. You know, we hear about Jonas Hiller possibly being dangled around the league. Nashville apparently had some interest, and nothing came to fruition on that front. Do you see the Islanders making a play for a goaltender? And if so, how quickly do you think that'll happen?
I'm not so sure about that. I think they like what they've seen from Kevin Poole, and they feel like this is his opportunity to show them that he's worth, you know, getting a long-term deal if he can play a lot of these games coming up. So again, Nabokov is back, and even beyond that, I think Kulin was really playing better than Nabokov when Nabokov was hurt a couple weeks ago. So, you know, I don't think they're going to mortgage the future. You know, you hear about Ryan Miller and maybe one of the Anaheim goalies being available. And, you know, from what I understand, the price tag for Ryan Miller is even higher than it was for Thomas Vanek. And now with the changes in Buffalo, who even knows if he's going to want to leave or if they're going to want to get rid of him, despite how bad they are. So, you know, I think goaltending was an issue for them over the summer, and they explored a lot of those deals for Miller. They explored a deal for Hiller. You know, and nothing has really prompted them. They wanted to sign Ray Emery, and he went to Philadelphia on a cheaper deal. And really, you know, they just decided to bring the Bach up back and see what they could do. And really, you know, would Ray Emery be doing any better in this position for the Islanders than what they've got right now? It's hard to say. But you know, Garcineau definitely went conservative on defense and in goal before the season, during free agency and trade deadline, and rather over the summer, you know, exploring trades. And I think they liked what they had, but what they had is not what they have right now. And I guess that's the danger of standing pat, that you can't really foresee these injuries that can set you back at the beginning of the year. And they've had it happen to them a couple of times in the last few years. So I think this is a situation that, you know, I'm sure Garcineau is kicking himself, and Jack Capuano wishes that he could have a few more healthy bodies out there. But, you know, this is a team that's being led by John Tavares right now. He's definitely being tested in his first season as captain. You can see the burden has been wearing on him a little bit, I think, in some of these games where he's trying to do a little too much. So, you know, it's a question of leadership, and it's a question of whether some of these guys that are signed long-term can pull this team up when they're not at full strength, and it really hasn't happened yet. So there's still time, but not a lot left.
Arthur Staple from Newsday, thanks very much for joining us this evening on NHL Midweek. Enjoy the game tomorrow evening.
Guys, anytime. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Arthur. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Big thank you to Arthur Staple of Newsday for having joined us. Still to come in about 10 minutes' time, Chris Botta of the Sports Business Journal is going to join us here on this fine program.
That's why this song is appropriate. It's called Tens of Dollars. The same amount of money, Pipsqueak, of course, for those who know their Winnipeg hip-hop, because I'm a big guy on the scene. Tens of dollars, the same amount of money as I have in my checking account.
Okay.
But the new TV deal.
New TV deal wasn't bit, worth tens of dollars. Billions. Yeah, it was a little bit more than that. A 15-year deal worth...
Isn't it 12?
Pardon me, 12-year deal worth $5.2 billion.
Well, you know why you said 15?
Why is that?
Because that was Rick DiPietro's contract. We were just talking Islanders. That's okay.
Okay.
Freudian slip.
Thank you for bailing me out. I appreciate it.
Is that a Freudian slip?
I don't know. Probably not.
Richard's just like... Just let Drew
talking.
Talk.
Yeah. Wow. I was trying to talk. He kept interrupting me, for the record. Anyways, it was a big contract that was signed earlier today for the national TV rights. Worth noting before we get into the details of the contract, of course, is that nothing changes here locally in Winnipeg. The Jets will still have all 82 games plus exhibition and rookie camp and everything else broadcast here on this fine station on TSN 1290. That doesn't change. That's going to be for years to come. And TSN Jets is still going to have a minimum of 58 Winnipeg Jets games on TSN Jets. So that also doesn't change. So in terms of local content for your Winnipeg Jets, nothing in that area mm-hmm. changes. It's on the national scene that you're going to see some seismic shifts in how hockey is broadcast. And really, you know, to put it simply, going to be more options available and more hockey on a typical Saturday night, where you used to just have sort of your you know, you'd have your early games that would mainly be regional broadcasts, you know, with Montreal, Ontario East would show this game, Manitoba West would show that game early, mm-hmm. and then across the country you'd get the one national game. Now you're going to pretty much have all those games available on a multitude of different platforms. You know, it just to me, it seems, my perspective, it just seems a little short-sighted of the NHL to freeze out one of their potential television providers when...
They basically froze it too.
Sure, freezing out, you know,
Hockey
TSN.
Night in Canada, they got Hockey Night in Canada by the you-know-what.
Right.
And so basically Hockey Night in Canada and TSN have been, you know, for all intents and purposes, frozen out.
Yep.
And the whole time when, you know, we've had multiple guests on this show over the last probably 2-3 years, mm-hmm. anticipating these negotiations.
Yep.
And what everybody speculated with is they'd go with sort of the NBA model,
right,
where ESPN gets Wednesdays and Fridays and TNT gets Thursdays, and everybody's at the table and everybody's partners, and they're cross promoting one game versus another.
Baseball and NFL do it better than NBA, because NBA is two carriers.
Sure.
Baseball is TBS, Fox,
right,
ESPN,
mm-hmm,
and then football has NBC, Fox, CBS,
NFL
ESPN.
Network,
well, I think
ESPN. And to me, it was a very bizarre decision by the NHL to go put all their eggs in one proverbial basket.
Right, and it's for 12 years. And I think the most important thing for fans in Winnipeg is that nothing's really changed. You mentioned it. TSN Jets is still going to have, I believe, a minimum of 60 of the Winnipeg Jets games. I believe it's 60, mm-hmm, of the Jets games on TV. TSN 1290 is still going to be your home of the Winnipeg Jets on radio. Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, Shane Knighty, the entire production crew here. So in Winnipeg, you know, there was a deal in place with True North with the Winnipeg Jets and TSN and TSN Radio. So nothing changes. Obviously, the other network has gotten a lot of the national TV exposure, but ideally, I think I do agree with you. You'd like to go with more of a three-headed monster where the games are split nationally between the three major networks, and obviously the NHL has decided to go in a different way and go with a long-term deal. But I think, you know, I look at it like an opportunity for TSN to get even stronger regionally.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. My biggest thing, and I want to talk about this after the break because we're not going to have enough time, I think, to flesh this out as much as I'd like to before Chris Botta comes up. I think, and this is probably a problem for not only sports, I think on a world level, I mean, I think you're just getting the monopolization of content here. And I think that's...
When do you ever want a monopoly anyways?
Well, I mean...
Unless you're playing Monopoly.
Yeah, I was waiting for that comment. But I think that's to me, is the biggest... My biggest issue with this, because when you have a monopoly, then you're not as accountable, in my opinion. And that goes for anybody. Had anybody gotten this deal, I think that exclusively to one network causes trouble.
Sure.
You know,
maybe why do I have to step up my game if there's nobody else in the game with me?
And I think as exactly, because as a consumer, the more competition, the better. For example, if you look at the National Football League, when you have the insiders like NBC, like Mike Florio and Peter King, who also works for CNN. CBS, you have, who they bring over
Jason
now?
Jason Lacanfora.
Yeah, Jason Lacanfora. That's not a great insider. But if you look at Fox, and you have Jay Glazer.
Sure. ESPN, right? You got Schefter and Mortensen.
Right. And so in NFL Network, you have Ian Rappaport and you have Mike Silver. The idea is there's competition. So who benefits from competition? The consumer.
Sure. Look at the Winnipeg grocery market right now with Target coming into the Winnipeg market.
I don't know what the hell we went there.
Wow.
It's the same thing.
The fact that Drew pulled out the analogy of groceries.
Holy smokes.
With sports programming.
Drew, I'm surprised you didn't hit Ezio over there with a salami after that point.
Yeah, I thought Drew was going to start to, you know, talk about the price of avocados.
Yeah.
It's the exact same. Well, the price of avocados would be a good example. If there's more competition, price is lower. It's that simple. It works on any number of platforms.
Is this microeconomics?
Yeah, but Drew, it doesn't mean that you have to start slicing an avocado live while we're on air.
Let's go to the break. I want to talk about this. We're going to have Chris on, and he knows much of the details of this negotiation, but I do want to talk about it after as well.
Okay. Yeah, well, let's go to break. When we come back, Chris Botta of Sports Business Journal is going to join us. You're listening to the NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Drew, that's it.
You're listening to
NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
Transferring a call.
We welcome back to NHL Midweek from Sports Business Journal, Chris Botta. Chris, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us. I'm sure this has been a tremendously busy day for you today.
Yeah, but now this is the highlight. Hi, Drew. Hey, Richard.
Well, we're doing on? well. We're doing well, thanks. We're not doing as well as the NHL owners with the nice cash flow that they got in their pockets today, but we'll make do with 15 cents as opposed to right. You know, $5 billion or so.
It's the blogger life. I know all about it.
You know, Chris, you know, I first emailed you yesterday, probably yesterday morning when your initial article came out on Sports Business yeah. Journal. And, you know, based on the initial article and based on what everybody had sort of expected over the last 2 or 3 years, we thought this was going to be a quote-unquote a three-headed monster. CBC would keep a little, TSN would keep their Wednesday night game, and then Rogers would get a Sunday night game as well. You know, what changed to make this, you know, the Rogers package?
Well, and, you know, really just to clarify, you know, you talked about over the last 2 or 3 years, that's what everybody was thinking. Just so you guys know, our magazine, Sports Business Journal, it's a trade publication. It's read by just about everybody, I believe, in mm-hmm. pro and college sports and people interested in sports business. We go to press on Thursday, and so my reporting was as up-to-date as I could get it to be, talking to all my sources through the negotiations on Wednesday night. You did everything I had in there was perfect? No, it's actually, you could laugh at some of it if you were to read it today, knowing what we know now. I'm proud of the work that we put into it. We open up the eyes to the TVA aspect, to the Sunday night aspect with Sportsnet. But the one thing, guys, that I could not find anybody on 6 days ago to tell me that TSN was not going to be part of this deal. I had, and I wrote in the final piece, as you might have it, that TSN's reluctance to increase their offer was the only major stumbling block in the negotiations, but I followed it up by saying sources believe that that will not be a problem and that matter will get settled in the coming weeks. That never happened. And I could tell you, really, even through this weekend, you know, people I talked to, I would expect to have called me even though the thing went to press. Nobody saw that part of it. So that's, you know, the headline here is $5.2 billion, major shift in the landscape of Canadian sports. What's going to happen with all that great talent that's all over all those networks and who's going to go where? Certainly sensitivity for loss of jobs and loss of work for people at CBC and elsewhere. We don't expect anybody to go through that. But the other big headline is, you know, what happened to this TSN thing? What changed, I believe, from what I could tell and from what I heard today, is that Rogers saw an opening with TSN's reluctance, or the fact, not their reluctance, but the fact that the NHL couldn't find middle ground with TSN, and they jumped in and just blew everybody out of the water.
Chris, you mentioned that the NHL and TSN were having difficulty finding middle ground, and when you look at this deal, it's for 12 years, it's for multiple billions of dollars. At the end of the day, why did the NHL decide to go with this Rogers package? Was it simply all about the money?
You know, yes is the short version. Now can I have another 45 seconds?
Go for it.
Because, yeah, I want to be respectful of the commissioner who deserves all the pats on the back that he is going to get from people in the industry and, most importantly, his colleagues who he cares about their respect the most. And on top of that, the owners, the people who he works for and with. And he said at the press conference today that, you know, this is not just about money. And if you were to talk to a John Collins or a Bill Daly, they would tell you the same thing. And I get that because I understand the work they put into it. I understand that, you know, okay, the easy part, getting the $5.2 billion and wherever CBC had to go to get the Rogers has to go to get the $5.2 billion. That's actually the easy part. Now it becomes, you know, they have a show. They have one huge show to put on that starts next October when the next season starts. You know, I'm already hearing from talent, the broadcasters, you know, who's going where, who's hiring what agent, are people going to leave? Are the TSN guys, you know, like Bob was kind of committed to saying, no, I'm still a reporter and this is what I do and this is what I expect to do. You know, will the TSN people stay? There's a lot of work that goes into it. But, you know, why was that decision made? Yeah, I mean, what I know for a fact is that TSN didn't offer anywhere near that. I mean, it's not even close. So even people at TSN will say they can't blame you. They're disappointed as heck. They're even a little frustrated. Hey, what about the legacy that we built here and the promotion we gave the league and first-class reporting and our relationships? I think those relationships will remain. But, yeah, why did they take the deal? $5.3 billion, and TSN was not even close. I encourage somebody out there in NHL land, TSN land, or somewhere else to leak out a report in the next week saying, well, their offer was 4.9 for the whole thing. Please do it. It's not going to happen.
You know, we talk about money, Chris. What about the length of the deal? Why 12 years?
You know, in my report, I said 10 years. They were mirroring the NBC deal mm-hmm. here in the States. That was for $2 billion for 10 years for just about everything. I believe that's where they were talking along, purely speculation on my part. But perhaps when Rogers came in, and I suspect, and they may not admit it, but made the NHL's knees quake a little bit under the table when they were told them that they were prepared to not just dabble in a Sunday night show, not just maybe take the All-Star game in the draft, but go for everything and then sub-license those properties to CBC for Hockey Night and TVA for the French language. You know, my guess is they said, no, we want all in. And maybe the negotiations then started from there. Then, okay, you want to go, let's go even longer term. And that's how it got to 12. But I will say that's pure speculation. You know, the kind of things I learned today, little things, but stuff that I know is important to me. TSN was informed yesterday. That might explain Bob McKenzie's tweets late last night. But it wasn't until yesterday. TSN might have had an inkling that they weren't in the ballpark. I'd like to think that they thought they were going to get a piece of this pie, but as of Monday, yesterday, 30 hours ago tops, they were informed that they were not going to be part of this.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Chris Botta of the Sports Business Journal talking about the NHL's new Canadian TV deal, which gets underway next October. Chris, you know, why not follow the football and the Major League Baseball model of content sharing?
On one hand, criticism of the league will be, you know, why not a multi-partner deal? Because you can get a big piece here and you can get a piece there, and maybe you add it all up and you get this huge pie. As good as the NBC-NHL deal is, and it's tough to really argue against it for $200 million a year. For perspective, guys, okay, $200 million a year times 10, but for perspective, it was less than a decade ago that NBC, the major network, not Versus or Outdoor Life Network, if you can remember that beauty, mm-hmm. or NBC Sports Network, you know, NBC was just showing the games for a cut of maybe a little revenue pie. They weren't even paying a rights fee.
Right.
ESPN's offer 6-8 years ago, I can't remember the exact year, was just for some sort of sharing. It wasn't for a rights fee. So they got $2 billion. But sure, you know, could they have gotten that deal with NBC and then maybe sold a game of the week to ESPN, which would have helped the NHL increase its profile even more? Because ESPN still is everything here. If you look at the metrics, ESPN mm-hmm. leads in everything. Now ESPN, those clips, those hockey clips, don't make their way, you know, as much as my friend Steve Levy and John Butchergrass might deny it. Those hockey clips don't make the 11 o'clock and the mm-hmm. 1 o'clock sports centers like they used to. There is no hockey show on ESPN. There's a soccer show, another sport I love. There's other kinds of shows. There's basketball and football and baseball, but there's no hockey show. So could they have done that? Yeah. The NHL's easy answer to you guys, if you were to talk to them, was, guys, maybe they wouldn't say it on the air, but they would say somewhat brazenly, guys, we got $5.2 billion. What's the cut up? We got $5.2 billion. Could we have gotten 5.5 if we split it up a little more? I guess, but They hit a huge home run here. My projections was that this was going to be maybe a smidge over $4 billion. I was off by $1 billion. Ah, what's $1 billion?
Yeah, among friends, at least.
Chris, exactly. Correct me if I'm wrong, but there are 4 years left on the deal between Hockey Night in Canada and the NHL, the sublease that Rogers has, and then it expires in 4 years. Do you expect Rogers to renew that deal after the 4 years has expired between Hockey Night in Canada?
I watched, probably like you guys did, I was in Toronto, I was in New York City today, and so I watched the press conference like everyone else. I fancy myself a good judge of subjects at press conferences when they stand behind a podium where they take questions, because I used to run those kind of things when I mm-hmm. worked for a team in this league. and saw it all in my time there. I'll say this, the 4 years, you know, seems to be, oh no, you know, where's Hockey Night in Canada going? You know, what's going to happen with, you know, great people like Kelly Friedman and the people who work on those shows? But the guy from Rogers, I thought gave my take was that it was a very sincere answer. He didn't just say, we'll see. He didn't just say, we're hopeful. He said, I don't remember the exact words, but he said enough that made me think, no, they understand that this has got to be on Hockey Night, that this has got to be on CBC. And, yeah, you know, call me up in 4 years from now, but the impression I got is that their intention, and it's a sincere one, is to keep Hockey Night in Canada on CBC. I don't even live in Canada, guys, and I hope that that's the case for as long as I live.
You know, Chris, in terms of speaking about it before and content sharing, and this essentially is going to be a monopoly now because Hockey Night in Canada, while sub-licensed out, the editorial content is controlled by Rogers now. Isn't that a negative for the fans when you only just from a consumer perspective, you only have one provider, whereas in the other sport, big sports we mentioned, you have four or five, so the competition level and the quality is held to a different standard?
You are correct. That doesn't mean that the NHL and Sportsnet and Rogers cannot prove people like you wrong and people like me might have similar thoughts. That's on them. You know, my concern here, I tweeted this afternoon and it touched a nerve with a couple people. I wrote that I will be curious to see if the opinions of people at the affected networks, the incoming guys from Sportsnet and women, and the people who aren't going to be around like TSN, if we see a change in their tone. And what I was getting at, because you can only say so much in 140 characters, is the folks at TSN, generally speaking, you know, Darren Drager is a reporter. He generally reports the facts, okay? But there have been times where, I mean, you know, he has never very often said, wow, I thought that suspension was, you know, out of line by Brendan Shanahan. I didn't like that offer. I didn't like what Gary Bettman, like, he's never said that. Will he say that now? And then you take any of the Sportsnet people, and, geez, I'm on that show with them every once in a while with people on Sportsnet, like on Hockey Central, it's called, the show with Darren and Coach McLean and yeah. And the rest of the crew and Kipper. And, you know, even just in the 8 or 10 minutes I'm on, they might say something like, you know, what's Bettman thinking about that? Or, you know, what's, you know, can you believe Snowy did that? Is that tone going to change? And how is the NHL going to react the next time that Doug McLean, who I respect his opinion to be, guys, I got banned by the team I used to work for, so I'm all for, I'm all for criticism, I'm all for open debate, but will that discourse have a softer touch now? And if that's the case, well, yeah, as you said very well, it's going to go across a whole bunch of networks. And here's another one for you. NHL Network, I tweeted this before I got on the train tonight, home. NHL Network, you know, their deal's with TSN. TSN is actually a real partner of the NHL's and the NHL Network. That is going to change, too. They weren't ready to announce that, as there's a lot that has to be done. They still have their deal with them through this year. But between now and the start of next season, you'll start to hear about new things going on in an NHL Network, which could include the inclusion of the talent, the broadcast people of Sportsnet, maybe some of CBC, in addition to the people who are already there. And you're going to see some changes there, too. But, yeah, is it going to be this one voice where we see the same 12 people across all these networks? And what will the sound, what will the tone of that voice be? It is an absolutely fair question. I hope this doesn't become a state-run kind of thing where the people, you know, pay $5.3 billion, they get all the games, and they just tell us everything's great all the time. I'd like to think, it's impossible for me to think that Damian Cox would ever go that route. It's impossible to think that some of these other guys, friends of mine, I've known a long time, would go that route. But, you know, I want to see it happen first. I want to see it happen.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Chris Botta of the Sports Business Journal. Now, Chris, we know that Gary Bettman obviously is actively involved in this negotiation, and we know he's probably got John Collins there, you know, his right-hand man in terms of the, in the negotiation room. You know, does Gary Bettman consult with, say, a kitchen cabinet of owners before he goes to this route?
My understanding is, and they add Bill Daly to that list, especially deep in the negotiations. John Collins really more big picture and absolutely deserves the credit with those other two guys and their staffers as well. I think in the case of Gary, from, you know, what I've learned from being kind of on all sides of this, but not being on the inside, so not having all the answers here, I'll be clear on that, is that, yeah, he has his group of people. I think with this one, you know, they kept it really shut. I was assigned to do a story on these negotiations that for a magazine that came out Monday yesterday. I am very glad and grateful to my editor for giving me that assignment, because if he hadn't, we wouldn't have had anything, and this would have come and gone without us taking a stab at it. But, you know, I threw a wide net out there to talk to everybody that I know in the game. Now it's an iPhone with a BlackBerry. It's pretty expansive through all these years that I can text people at, you know, pretty good high levels. You know, nowhere near as well as Bob and some of the other people I mentioned, but better than maybe others, people who used to write Islander blogs, for example. And and it was a tight circle. I believe that. It wasn't Chris, I can't talk about it. It was Chris, I don't know. I don't know enough about this stuff. So I think it's a small group, and there is a media. What are they called? The media, NHL media committee. That there's a handful of owners and executives on. So he will consult with them. But I got to tell you, you know, I am sure there was some debate internally about, wow, do we really just leave TSN? Do we leave those guys? Do we leave those people, those producers? But other than that, if you're calling, for example, you know, let's pretend Gary's calling Jeremy Jacobs or Calgary, or, you know, and says, hey, I got an offer for $5.3 billion for 12 years. I don't think you need a bunch of Harvard, Yale, McGill, you know, educated people to say, go for it. What do you, hang up the phone? Why are you talking to me? Sign the darn thing. So I don't think it was that, I can't imagine it was that deep a debate. I think it was more, hey, can you believe this? Oh my God. Sign the thing, you know. That's my impression of it. They said this came together quickly. When somebody offers you that kind of money, that's how things come together quickly.
Chris, when you look at this deal, the new deal, and you compare that to the American deal, the deal that NBC signed, do you look at it like this is double or triple or quadruple or, I don't know, quintuple, whatever the deal, you know, when you break it down? And as a second part to that...
430 million, give or take a million, to 200 million.
Right.
That's your break.
That's about double, right?
It's not a math.
Yeah,
it's
a little more than double, according to my LaSalle University education.
Right. But as far as the total value, it was $5 billion versus $1
billion, right? Versus $2 billion.
$2 billion.
Okay. 5.2 versus $2 billion.
All right.
So $3.2 billion more. I couldn't do the percentages on that.
Who do you think gets more value in the deal, the NHL or Rogers?
Oh, my immediate reaction is to say the NHL. Of course, a popular question is how could Rogers possibly get that back? I equate it on a much bigger level to somebody who buys a sports team, an NHL team. And has already been told that team hasn't, you know, made money ever, and may not even if you sell out everything. But you do it to build your own brand. Maybe you do it because you love it. In the case of Rogers, you know, they're not stupid people. These are people who know this business as well as anybody, have been wildly successful at it. So, you know, they came up with a number they were most comfortable with. They're dancing in the streets there. In the NHL, where they're maybe a little more subdued, but they got to be lighting up cigars over there. Come on, guys. But right away, immediately, the NHL is the big winner. We're going to know in 5 to 12 years how big a winner Sportsnet is. But the bottom line is they got everything. There is no competition. They have nobody to go up against like TSN. They have it all, guys. It's quite an amazing deal. I got a call 45 minutes after midnight last night. I woke up and my knees buckled when I was told what was going on. It is, once again, I'm not Canadian. I'm not there, and it's still a monumental event. What happened today?
Last question, Chris, although our producer, Michael, you were speaking to earlier, was up before 9 o'clock this morning. That's how breaking the news. That's how big the news
is. Wow, I heard Michael never gets out of bed before 11:30.
Exactly. He texts me at 6:15 in the morning. What about the deal? But final question for you, and it kind of relates back to what we were discussing before, and that's somebody who maybe will say controversial things, and that, of course that's Don Cherry, Chris. What happens? I mean, what are you hearing, if anything at all?
He's going to be around. I mean, and if he's not going to be around eventually, it'll be a subtle parting. I was shocked. It said everything about Canadiana, if that's a word to me, and I love Canada as much as I love my own country because I've made my life in hockey. I spent so much time there. It is an incredible country. I thought it was amazing that this press conference about a $5.2 billion deal, all of a sudden I became, well, what's going to happen with Grape? You know, I was like, wow, like, you know, why isn't anybody asking about, you know, Dregs and Duffy, you know, and other people, you know? You know, Grapes is with the company that at least is keeping Hockey Night in Canada. Once again, for Bettman to stand up and say Don is a friend to me and a friend to the game and he's going to be around or whatever Gary said, and the guy said that too, he's going to be around. Don is pushing 80, he's in the 70s, you guys know.
79.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he might also want to have a time. So, you know, 4 years left on the current CBC deal. If Don got to do this, you know, pretty steadily, if not regularly, for the next 4 years and had a nice ride into the sunset and gets the broadcast award. I don't think he's ever gotten that. Well, he doesn't have a Hall of Fame. I know that. And gets everything that people feel. I personally have a problem with some of the things he says. I also know there's this incredible side to him. I know he's the godfather of Mike Milbury's kid. I don't know if anybody, you guys know that.
I didn't know that.
And I've always heard wonderful stories from Mike about Don. Listen, he's gonna be fine, and I get it, but I just can't, you know. That's a minor subplot to me, but I understand it's major there. My answer is I'd be shocked if he's not there for the next few years for the foreseeable future.
Chris Botta from the Sports Business Journal, thanks so very much for joining us this evening on NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Great insight into what has been a tremendously busy day for yourself.
Thank you, gentlemen. Enjoy the game tomorrow night.
Thanks very much, Chris. Take care.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. Let's go to break on TSN 1290.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Big thank you to Chris Botta of the Sports Business Journal for joining us to talk about the new Canadian TV deal. Is this the new Bruce song?
It's actually a cover, but yeah, it's the new Bruce, the new High Hopes CD.
And you have high hopes to see Bruce in Winnipeg.
Yeah, I do have high hopes to see Bruce in Winnipeg, Drew, and he's going on a new tour to promote the album, which is amazing news, so I can't wait for that tour to be announced.
Has he actually finished the tour from the previous album yet?
No, he continued it in Australia, so it's kind of been an extension. Then there was rumors that he was going to release a new album, which he is now.
Right.
This is the title track on the new album, but it's a cover. It's not written by him. A couple covers on this album, a couple songs on the album that have been performed at concerts before, like 41 Shots, but haven't been added to an actual album.
It's a great song, 41 Shots.
It is a great song.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, because I think he actually recently sang it again in Germany after the Trayvon Martin case. Because it was about Abadou Diallo, right?
That's correct.
There you go. See, I know a little bit something every now and then.
Not bad.
Thank you. You want to continue on this? We're going to have a short segment here. We went long with Chris Botta, obviously.
Good interview.
Yeah, great insight into that situation, into the negotiations there.
I think we touched on it with Chris, and we touched on it prior to the interview with Chris, but my biggest concern, and I think it's quite valid, I think Chris tended to agree with that concern as well, is the lack of competition, and it doesn't mean that TSN is going to provide content, but the lack of, you know, when you're the when there only is one provider, there's a there's a possibility of becoming stagnant, of becoming a mouthpiece, of doing a lot of things. And then, you know, as a viewer, mm-hmm. as a consumer, I don't think that's a good thing. I think that's a bad thing. It's like one company owning all of the being able to distribute all of the beer in Canada, for example. I mean,
sure.
You know, you kind of do what you want. That's the whole concern with monopoly. You do what you want, and who is there to take it to compete with you on that level? And nobody is. And we
to
know,
keep you honest.
Yeah, to keep you honest, exactly. And now this is a concern not only because it's for 1 year, or because it's for 2 years, but it's for 12 years.
Sure. It's worth, to that point. I mean, the last time, there was a time, I mean, it was about, I guess, 15 years ago, give or take now, where the NHL was off TSN, and it was for a four-year window.
Yeah, but it was never owned. Yes, it was four-year window, 98 to 2002.
Right.
But it was never, you know, and even when you go back to the 70s, you're talking just CBC.
Mm-hmm.
In the 60s,
There were no other games broadcast. There was one game a week broadcast.
But not only that, Drew, I mean, it was owned by, CBC, a government run.
Right.
There was an ability to criticize because it wasn't the corporate model you have now.
Uh-huh.
And it's different.
Sure.
And Ron and Don can kind of go and say whatever they want. You know, hey, you might disagree with them or you might agree with them, but they can say whatever the heck they want.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that'll be the case? I don't know. I mean, that's what Chris said, too. He doesn't know if they'll be able to say the same things that they said before. And as a viewer.
Or if they say it once and twice and then they get called in, and said maybe you want to tone down on that. You're right. Because
look at the NFL. Look at the NBA.
Yeah,
I keep pointing back to it, baseball, but you criticize because you're able to.
Sure. If Bob Costas, if NBC owns the entire NFL package,
mm-hmm.
Bob Costas probably doesn't say three quarters of the things he says in his sort of halftime soliloquies that he gets away with.
Charles Barkley.
Sure, Charles Barkley. Same thing on TNT. He probably doesn't say those things if there's. If there's not somebody sitting there, waiting in the wings to take over and to call them on the carpet as well,
I personally do not think that's a good thing, and it's not a matter of sour grapes. It is what it is. So be it. But I just think from the perspective of the viewer, the listener, it's less effect in terms of Winnipeg, but across Canada.
Sure.
And Cam Cole has a good article about it up in the Vancouver Sun. He makes some similar points, that this isn't a great benefit to the league, and I think as he pointed it out in the interview with Chris, is this all about the money? And it's all about the money.
The NHL has proven that more often than not that they're usually all about the money for better or worse.
And that's why I asked this question as well about who's in on the negotiations. I mean. Does the loyalty, is there a loyalty factor? Is there not? Are we just talking about such big dollars it doesn't even matter? But time put in,
yeah.
At the end of the day, it's one of those things. You can become very jaded if it gets down to you put in 10 years, and then it's just a matter of who provides the most money.
Yeah.
And I realize that we're talking about media conglomerates here.
Thanks for the effort. Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
CBC's been putting in a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that Hockey Night Canada is involved now, I mean, come on. I mean, they're involved, but they're, you want to take bets on the 4 years and how long that lasts? I bet you get a lot more action on the terminated after 4 years than.
Oh, I don't think they renew after. And the truth is, it just sounds like it's not even, it just sounds like it's going to be Rogers on a different station at that point in time. It's not like CBC doesn't control any of their own editorial content.
And if that's the case, don't insult my intelligence.
Yeah, don't tell me it's Hockey Night in Canada with Foster Hewitt, and they're just buying the name at that point in time. It's Hockey Night in Canada on 14 different channels, not on the CBC exclusive.
Even own the advertising rights.
And they're not paying anything for the games either.
So they're just promoting their own content interspersed within the game.
Sure, they get to promote Dragon's Den or Road to Avonlea, yeah. or whatever, Heartland or whatever they want to promote.
I got issues with them.
We will see over the next 12 years, I guess, how this whole thing plays out. It'll be something to keep an eye on and monitor.
Let's talk some hockey after the break.
Let's go to break. When we come back, 6 things we learned this week. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
Six things we learned this week. I start with my colleague to my immediate left, Ezra Ginsberg. Ezzy, last night, Los Angeles Kings center Mike Richards proved again why he is one of the best leaders in hockey and is a major reason why the Kings will be a contender once again in this year's Stanley Cup playoffs.
Mike Richards, if you watched the game yesterday, got the game-tying goal, and it was a really nice play by Jeff Carter, who fed the puck to Mike Richards. But Mike Richards is having a really good year right now, kind of unsung. And he was a big part of the team that won the Stanley Cup playoffs the Stanley Cup a few years back. And the guy that just does the real, you know, easy things, he's such a leader on the ice. And when you talk about the Kings, Andrei Kopitar got the overtime winner. But when you look at the Kings up the middle, they're so good. And Mike Richards is a huge piece of that. I think he'll be on the Olympic team. And he leads by example, and he knows where to be, what spots to be in. He finishes his checks, really good at faceoffs. I think he's about 58% right now. But he's when you think of the guys that are a huge part of that, which is Ben Scrivens right now because of Quick's injury, you can't forget about Mike Richards. He doesn't wear the C, but you know, he's a big time leader on that team.
Remus.
Five.
Richie, if you allow me to switch your order, because sticking with the Los Angeles Kings, Jarrett Stoll may be the most underrated third-line center in the NHL.
Well, Drew, first of all, I don't like the fact that you changed my order.
Okay.
In all honesty, kind of to Ezzy's point here, you look at the middle, you look at Andrei Kopitar, you look at Mike Richards, and you look at Jarrett Stoll, and you look at three guys who contribute both offensively and defensively. And Jarrett Stoll, I mean, he's got to be one of the best third-line centers in the National Hockey League. He slots behind two of the best centers in the National Hockey League. He kills penalties. He can play the power play, play the point on the power play, has a good shot, and wins faceoffs. He's defensively responsible. I mean, what else can you ask for? He's a pro. If people remember him, of course, from the big goal against Vancouver in the first round on the way to the Stanley Cup. A guy that they, you know, him and Matt Green, in that trade for Vyshnovsky, a really nice move by Lombardi years back. And Stoll brings a leadership quality to that team and brings a professionalism to that team. And I don't think gets enough attention for what he does, but he adds a ton to the Kings.
Four.
Back to Ezzy Ginsberg. Ezzy, this is a crucial year in the development of Columbus Blue Jackets center Ryan Johansson, who is trying to establish himself as a bona fide number one center in the NHL.
Yeah, he's 21 years old. He's in the third year in the NHL, and he had 3 points last night, and in a rout, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, this is a very important year for him. Thus far, he has gone from the first line to the second line to the third line, and he's gone through major droughts. We've talked to Aaron Portsline about that on this show before, but this year he finds himself on the top line right now, and with injuries, he's really depended on for a lot of offense. So this is a big year as a 21-year-old who came into the league as a teenager. It's a big year for him. I don't know if he's a bona fide number one center for the Blue Jackets. He is right now, but he's definitely being given a lot of ice time, a lot of responsibility, and it's a big year for his development.
Three.
Richard Pollock, and I think I understand what you were going with here. Seth Jones and Jonas Brodin are tremendous players, but people don't pay enough attention to how impressive it is that they can play alongside Ryan Suter and Shea Weber, that they have the talent to do so. Is that what you're going for?
No.
Oh, okay.
I think we need a new host.
Remus, you're up. I'm done.
You want to read that one again?
Sure. Let me just pull up the show plan here.
Okay. Let me actually say what I was thinking. Between
I don't have it. It's not in the show plan.
You're right, because you sent it later.
It's okay. So what I'm saying is Jonas Brodin, great talent. I mean, if you listen to Pierre Maguire yell at you for 3 hours about how good he is, he turns is not as good. But Jonas Brodin's a good talent, and Seth Jones. They're both talented players. They're both going to be Olympians. They're both going to play on many playoff teams. But I think people need to take just a step back and realize that who they're playing with.
Oh, sorry. This is where I got confused.
And Brody Ian's playing with Suter, and now Seth Jones is playing alongside Kevin Klein recently. But the idea is it's a lot easier to make your way in the National Hockey League playing beside two Norris Trophy candidates. And while I'm not trying to take anything away from them. I think they're both great talents. But you play with Shea Weber. He eats 25, 30 minutes a game. Everybody knows he's the best defenseman on the ice. Big shot. Can play both sides. Can do everything. Ryan Suter plays 30 minutes, 35 minutes a game. Makes it look easy. Gets rid of the puck. Goes to the right place. Teams try and stay away from all that stuff. So when you're playing with those guys, you're inevitably going to look better. Doesn't mean better. Maybe better than you are, but doesn't mean you're not good.
Sure.
So I think that needs to be noted. When people talk about the awards and talk about this and that, sure, don't get me wrong, these players are great players, but they're also helped by playing alongside, top five talent.
Two.
Ezzy Ginsberg of the New York Rangers are still having difficulty adapting to Alain Vigneault's new up-tempo system, but they are a great candidate to heat up heading into the second half of the season.
Nothing has changed in the last 2 weeks. They're still struggling, but they've been pretty good in the last 10 games. They've won 6 of their last 10 games. They're really struggling in their own zone, and a guy like Michael Delzato has been a healthy scratch, and he's been really struggling. He's a guy that I like, but they almost seem to be overthinking the game. But when you look at the New York Rangers, they're still a team with a lot of offensive talent. We talked about that last week, and they've got a lot of young guys that are really kind of in a rut. And Derek Stepan is kind of the leader of that team now, along with Ryan Callahan. But you look at Rick Nash is still struggling to find his feet. But to me, if there's one team out there, especially in the weak Eastern Conference, the Islanders, I don't think anybody would have predicted the Islanders would have been last place in the Eastern Conference. But to me, the Rangers are the one team because they're so strong on defense. Like, guys, they still have the same group with Ryan McDonagh and Dan Girardi and Mark Stahl. And as soon as they put it together, I think that, and again, they're a team that's struggling to score goals right now. And to me, they're probably the best candidate for a team to move up the standings. And we talked about this last week. Lightning are probably my choice to go down the standings. But you look at, as a team, they're still a really talented group. And you go down the line, Richie, a guy like Chris Kreider, who came into the playoffs a couple years ago, he's really struggled. But I think they're going to break out once they all get on the same page. But I think everything's just gone wrong there. And Alain Vigneault's having a difficult time getting these guys to change their style because the style, is so different than what John Tortorella had there. But I think once they get it together, they're going to be a team to be reckoned with in the East.
One.
See if I can get this one right. Brent Burns' return from injury is a needed boost for a Sharks team that can rely on his big body and goal-scoring ability.
The Sharks have a ton of talent. I mean, Brent Burns takes a puck to the face. Nobody's really sure. They didn't really mention the work concussion. You have to assume that was probably the issue. It kind of ended up being a toothache, and then they weren't sure. And he blew off after hours. They weren't sure what was going on Saturday night. But he's back now. And Brent Burns is a big body Drew that goes to the net and has a great shot. And the Sharks have a ton of talent. Thornton and Marlowe and Couture and Pavelski and Herodon, on and on and on. But he adds a different element to what they do. He's different than Thornton in his physicality. He's different than Marlowe and Couture in the way he plays. And that kind of, they call it sandpaper, but that real toughness, that guy who goes to the net, is something that I think the Sharks have lacked for the past couple of years. And I think he adds that element. Now, if they can rectify their issues, in my opinion, on the back end, at least some depth issues and maybe even a top-end guy, I think they really could set themselves up well.
He looks like he would fit in with the 1970s Philadelphia Flyers very easily.
Or the 2012 Boston Red Sox.
Sure, with the facial hair. Exactly right. Me too, though. And you guys with the mustaches.
Yeah, we need a picture, Remus, of the show today.
We'll do that afterwards. You're listening to NHL Midweek. Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment on this Tuesday evening here on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment, Tuesday night, special edition of NHL Midweek, because tomorrow night at this point in time, the Jets and the New York Islanders will probably be somewhat about starting the third period, give or take a few minutes.
Be high scoring game tomorrow.
Yeah? You think high scoring?
Yeah.
you look at that Islanders defense, you wonder how it couldn't be, and you look at their goaltending, and, well, if the Jets play like they did against the Devils, shutting them down, then, you know, you should be able to, but then again.
5-3 Jets.
5-3 Jets. Yeah. He's on the record, folks. Put it on the board. Ezzy, tomorrow, where are we going to be? What's tomorrow?
I want to tell everyone about an event happening at the Chill Bar and Grill tomorrow. We've been promoting it a lot on the website and Twitter. It's called Snap the Stash. It's in support of Movember Winnipeg, and we hope everybody can come out. It's going to be lots of fun. We're going to have giveaways, and it's for a good cause, so I hope everybody can come out.
Yeah, absolutely. Snap the Stash tomorrow at the Chill Bar and Grill, located right at Confusion Corner, 423 McMillan Avenue, to be technically correct, right next to Dollarama and Organza, and right over there.
As he's done a great job promoting this event so far, I have to give him props for how much time and effort he's put into it, and he has some Ezzy Bucks made up.
Ezzy Bucks, which we tweeted about yesterday, and they're the most amazing form of currency known to mankind.
The legal tender, I heard.
I heard they are, too, in that if you use it, you will get arrested and immediately.
You know, we were going to talk about the Forbes magazine and the value of franchises, but I think we should shelve that for Saturday, and I look forward to Saturday's show, of course. Because during the break, we were told of, we were speaking to our friend here, producer Michael Remus.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big meeting coming up this week.
Big meeting. Yeah. Big meeting. That's the sound of the bus being driven right over Remus.
Michael and his girlfriend, hashtag Leah, who were recently on the Kiss Cam at the MTS Center.
That's right. Everybody noticed that.
Everybody noticed that.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I had players coming up and tweeting about it.
No, you didn't.
No. Well, no, they're players in a completely different league. But, yeah, they're still players.
League, yeah. And anyhow, so there's a big meeting. Hashtag Leah gets to meet Remus's parents.
Okay, guys.
And so we're not sure if this is happening on tomorrow night.
Remus's mom's birthday. Happy birthday, Susan.
Or Friday at the Hanukkah party.
Yes, happy Hanukkah for you boys. The first night of Hanukkah, of course, starting Wednesday night. Hanukkah and U.S. Thanksgiving coinciding, I think, for the first time.
So you're going to eat a Jam Buster and a turkey at the same time, Drew? Or?
Actually, I'm going to take my potato pancake, my latke, and wrap it around a turkey breast and just eat that as a salad. So, it's a new double down. You know, it's two latkes and a chicken and a turkey breast all together.
I like what you're thinking there, Drew.
Thank you.
So, Remus,
throw some cranberry sauce on there. A little applesauce.
Like applesauce.
Yeah.
I think we got something.
A little stickle.
Remus, what are you thinking? Tomorrow night or Friday?
I don't know. I got to talk to the parties involved, and we'll have some conversations.
Hang on.
And then
negotiate.
Yeah, we'll negotiate.
It's a 15-year deal,
and we'll work out a deal that benefits everyone.
First of all, Richard, it's not an all or nothing proposition. Why does it have to be tomorrow night or Friday night? Why can't it be both nights?
It might be.
It should be.
We'll see who makes the decisions on Saturday.
Yeah, we'll have to
we're continually having conversations. And look,
what you can say is the deal is not done.
Yeah, the deal's not done yet.
If you want to go back to a couple years past, the deal is not done yet. Anyway, so we'll be able to be sure to update people about that.
Oh yeah, because I'm sure everyone wants to know about that and doesn't want to hear your opinions on the new Forbes evaluations.
Well, I mean, the Forbes valuations quickly, and we'll touch on them more on Saturday. But I mean, these teams every year when they're making on a broad level. Every team has losses here and losses there. These guys have franchise value rocketing up. These numbers came out before the new TV deal came out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, give me a break. I lost the owner. I'm a billionaire, and I lost $2 million last year, even though my franchise value went up $20 million.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a common occurrence. That's the common phrase you hear. Oh, you know, where our operating loss was this. But it's like, come on, guys. I mean... Yeah, well, the franchise value. What are the Leafs worth? Like $5.2 billion.
I own every restaurant and bar within 2 miles of the arena, but I'm losing money hand over fist.
They all do, right? You look at MLSE, for example. What do they own? What's the bar across the street?
Real Sports.
Real Sports, and you have a walkway there, and you own this, and you own that, and I mean they all do. I mean every one of these owners and the new Edmonton Arena, these guys are all making so much money. So when you hear, just take it with a grain of salt when you hear that they lost a million or two or even 10 sometimes, because you look at the franchise value. Even Ottawa. Ottawa's a big thing, you know. Eugene Melnyk owns the arena and he owns the team and claims he's, you know, there's articles about how much money he's losing. What are the Senators worth? They're ahead of the Jets.
Yeah. You know? I don't believe that. I mean, I have trouble. I mean, I read it and I understand it, but I still have trouble believing that.
And don't get me wrong. I mean, these aren't precise. Maybe we'll get our friend Mike Colligan who writes for Forbes to talk about the numbers. And there obviously is some ambiguity in there, and there's some assumptions. The books aren't open. These are private businesses.
Private companies.
But having said that, I mean, more or less.
Well, the only team whose numbers are really wide open are the Florida Panthers. Because they get
just bought.
Because yeah, because well, and they cause they have a deal with Broward County in Florida in regards to the lease arrangements and everything else that they have to show their books and that I mean Deadspin did a whole expose on that. You can find it online somewhere where you know they really go through the numbers of the Florida Panthers and they say you know this is what they're claiming and this is what it actually is. And let me tell you, there's a reason why people continue to buy the Florida Panthers.
The reason why people continue to buy every franchise.
That's right, because they're not losing money hand over fist.
I mean, you get a $5.2 billion deal.
Yeah.
And when you have a deal in $200 million a year in the States, I mean, there's money to be made. The digital rights obviously are going to put a nice infusion of cash into the business. And, you know, the prices are only going up. And, I mean, the one thing you want to wonder, as a consumer, is the ticket prices. With these crazy digital rights packages and how much money they're being paid, you'd hope the ticket prices would...
Don't even finish that statement.
I don't know. I mean, but you know what? I will say this, Drew. The NFL, for example, I mean, the ticket prices aren't outlandish.
No. The most expensive seat is about $120. The cheapest seat's about $50.
Yeah, but there's way more seats there.
Sure, there's way more seats, Michael. But, I mean, at the end of the day, there's also way less games.
Yeah.
True. So to pay it would be not as big of a deal.
Fair enough.
So you'd hope that because the NFL, with a huge TV deal, doesn't have to charge as much for tickets. You'd hope maybe the NHL would move that way. But, of course, as you caught me in the middle of that, Drew, that likely won't be the case, which is unfortunate, by the way.
Yeah.
Because...
I know.
At some point, you know,
it's on our backs.
When's enough enough?
It's on the fans' backs.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's it for this Wednesday evening, or Tuesday evening, pardon me, at NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Arthur Staple of Newsday and Chris Botta of the Sports Business Journal. In case you missed either of those interviews, they will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. We remind you to follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Saturday afternoon, 12 noon, for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this fine station. We'll be back Wednesday with NHL Midweek, next Wednesday and every Wednesday following that for the rest of the year. For my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Michael Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We hope to see you tomorrow night at the Chill Bar and Grill for the Snap the Stash event in support of Movember. Until Saturday, if it's Tuesday evening, it's NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
NHL Midweek,
the podcast.
Catch NHL Midweek live Wednesday night on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.